The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the only complete planning platform natively integrated with Microsoft 365. With Vena, your finance and operations team can maximize your productivity and efficiency to deliver data and insights to your whole business faster. Vena lets your team use the Microsoft apps they already know and love, like Excel and PowerPoint, while giving your business the power of scale through a robust centralized database and AI capabilities. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Vena. When financial planning and analysis, FP&A, and controllership operate in silos, organizations can find themselves caught in a perfect storm of missed opportunities and financial missteps. In this episode, we're diving into the critical synergy between these two powerhouse functions and exploring how their collaboration can transform finance departments from reactive to proactive. Joining me to share his insights on unlocking financial agility and value creation through the FP&A and controllership partnership is Tom Siegmiller, the CFO at Texada Software. Tom brings a wealth of experience from his time as Vice President of FP&A at Vena and his leadership roles at MyoVision Technologies and OpenText. Tom has a keen eye for leveraging financial and operational data to drive enhanced business decisions and has been instrumental in crafting compelling financial narratives for executive teams, investors, and board members alike. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Melissa. Great to be here.
The last time we had you on the show, you had just finished your first 90 days as a CFO of Texada. And now here you are. It's been over a year since you've been there. Do you have any learnings? Tell us what's it been like?
It's been an awesome year. Much like every other tech company, I'm going to call it ring-fenced mayhem. It's what drew me to the industry in the first place, and it's what keeps me in. The learnings come every day, like in every single new role. Like you said, I'm only a year in, and so I would say the learnings show up in every facet of every bit of engagement every single day. Probably the biggest learnings this year have been focused on AI and how our worlds have evolved.
It's a big topic for sure. You have had experience with FP&A and controllership. You've worked at different companies, seeing how those two groups get along or work together or don't work in harmony. What would you say are some of the things that you've learned about those two groups as you reflect back on your experiences?
I think most of my experiences originated in FP&A. I've spent most of my career in FP&A-centric roles. I would say my perspective on controllership changed greatly. At one point in my career, I took a lateral move to create a lot more breadth in my experiences. I was very, very focused on FP&A, didn't have a lot of controllership experience. And so went to a smaller organization to ultimately take on the entirety of the finance remit. And if I were to fast forward after 3 years, I think I had a huge appreciation for what a controllership team does. And up to that point, I think I would probably almost describe myself as ignorant as to what they go through day in, day out in the role. And I think the saying you have to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes to truly understand them just rings so, so true. And so I think gaining that extra experience, gaining that breadth, changed fundamentally how I feel about the controllership role and really shapes the value that I know is there and present in a controllership team.
Well, and it's interesting because a lot of your experience came from the FP&A side, and I would say my career has brought me more through the controllership side of the house. And so my early days after I had left KPMG were very much firmly on the controllership, you know, working with FP&A on forecasting, et cetera. But I would say when I first started out, I was a little bit naive to how critically important them working together is. I thought of them as two separate functions, even though they're part of finance. I thought of it as, okay, there's a job to be done and a job to be done. And for me, I'd say through the years, I've really come to appreciate controllership. You know, they're getting all the operational accounting done, the taxes, the payroll, they're touching a lot of different things. They also then need to report on these results, report on the actuals. And yet in order to provide context to that, they need to know what has gone into the plan and where did it come from. And so over time, I came to realize that we really have to look at them together as a team in terms of being able to enable one another to be better at what they're doing. Because controllership is seeing a lot happening in the business through those different parts, whether it's AP, AR, payroll, tax, all the different touch points they've got. FP&A has different touch points. When you bring them together is when you get a much better view of what's going on in the org.
Yeah, it's such a symbiotic relationship when you get it right. When you don't, there seem to be just these inherent walls between, I'm going to call it the sub-functions of finance, really, is what it is. And it can't be the case, right? Like, you have to find a way to work together. I always go back to this saying, like, a rising tide raises all boats, right? Mm-hmm. And the concept of, I'm going to go it alone, this is what my mandate is, in FP&A, in controllership, just doesn't work ultimately.
One of the things that I have found as well is that you often do get a little bit of friction and a barrier that seems to present itself. And it's not always obvious why that is. What has been your experience with that? And what do you think is the root cause of some of it?
There's a whole host of reasons for it. I think there can be instances where controllership and FP&A believe they have competing priorities, as an example. And if they were to really sit down and seek to understand what each party or each function is trying to accomplish, you find there aren't actually competing priorities. You have to dig deep enough. You have to find the similarities, the ties that bind. But when you find them, I think these two functions act as an accelerant for each other. Some of the things that I've experienced, and again, it goes back to walking a mile in somebody else's shoes and having an appreciation, is sometimes I've heard from controllership, you know, FP&A is all about strategic finance. Like, everything you get to do is elevated. It's at the executive level. You know, you're treated differently, as an example. And having done both the jobs now, or like at least overseen it and been actively involved, you know, I can say both roles have a great deal of grind associated with them, like a whole bunch of blocking and tackling that you have to do down in the weeds. And it's really neat because I think somebody in FP&A, as an example, has to go and earn the trust of an executive, earn the trust of that business partner in order to have the right to not just have a seat at the table, but have a say when you sit at that table. And controllership is in a unique position where they're doing a lot of that really gritty blocking and tackling within the business. And if you do that, if you earn the right, people want to hear what you have to say. And I think we've got to find a way in organizations to elevate that voice of controllership, as we often do, focused on FP&A. And I think maybe in controllership, they don't know that they've earned that right to have a voice. And people really do want to hear what they have to say because of their knowledge, because of their perspectives, because of all of those insights that you alluded to, and all of those areas that they touch in the org through AR, AP, payroll. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. That gives you a unique amount of insight that you should be sharing, and you're actually doing an organization a fundamental disservice if you don't.
And I agree. I think sometimes the friction comes because you're so busy and we're asking things of one another. And sometimes our timelines are a little bit off in terms of the pressure. You know, think about the seasonality of the work. There's not one seasonal calendar for the entire finance group. In fact, what's busy times for payroll looks different from tax, looks different from FP&A and reporting. And so I think sometimes that is what is there. And so it can be easy when you're, like you said, caught up in the grind to think, oh, maybe it's easier, better on that side of the house. So I think, you know, realizing, hey, we all need to find that time. There's going to be those times we have to put our heads down, but we all need to find that time to be able to go and partner with the business as well is important. And yep. I think FP&A, we get pushed a little more to do that in that side of the house than on controllership. So yep. naturally they're out there doing it. I think it's also in how you define your stakeholders. You know, in FP&A, it's often the case you might be assigned a part of the business to support. So you get really close with that part. Let's say I'm the mm-hmm. partner that is working with the sales and marketing side of the house. That stakeholder, you're really embedded in that piece of the business. Controllership often feels like most of their stakeholders are within the finance team. And it's true, they're working a lot with folks in finance, but they do have stakeholders outside if you're really deliberate about thinking about what those relationships are and fostering them. I think about how, you know, the team on the payroll side, you're working so closely with the human resources yeah. team in a different way and on different things than you would in FP&A, where you get pulled in to help with deals and deal support and really seeing what's happening in sales and getting a view into that world. And some of the best controllers that I've worked with, you start to realize they're getting pulled in to so many things that sometimes you have to try and figure out, okay, what are we going to say no to? Because if somebody who comes and shows up and has offered that insight, people start to see it and they come back and they crave more and more and more of it, just like they do with their FP&A business partner. But that takes how we show up when we're invited in, earning that seat at the table. And there's a lot of opportunities and doors that we can open up if we choose to open them up for within the controller side of the house.
So on that note, do you think it's actually on CFOs then, and I do, to pull their controllership team along for the ride? So if they've never seen that before, show them how they can add value in deal structuring, show them how they can show up with the HR team, show them and teach them how to business partner in a very, very similar fashion to what FP&A does?
I think so. I think it's definitely opening the door. I think it's also equipping the team with the skills.
Sure.
Similar to how FP&A along the way has had to move from what was traditionally thought, you sit in the back corner with your Excel spreadsheets, your heads down in your numbers, and we had to evolve to, okay, how do I take what I see? I see a whole bunch of stuff in these numbers, but how do I distill it and tell the story? The storytelling, the communication, the relationship building, knowing how to convey my message for different types of audiences. Those skill sets need to equally be invested in that controllership team to help them in terms of when they're brought in, whether it's, hey, we're going to review policies and I want your input on this. Okay, when you go, how are you going to show up? Showing your confidence in them as well, that, you know, you start with giving exposures, you try to open up opportunities as you see them in the business to give that chance for them. And that's also about giving them the time, trying to be intentional about, okay, when is this possible? Because they have this seasonality that they're riding. There's certain times of the year where it's just not possible to put more things on your desk, but others where you've got the window and you've got to strike when you can and open up those doors. So I think that, you know, the skill set, opening the doors. And then I also think it is about the team themselves taking that initiative. Do you want to partner with the business and how? And leaning in. And that is demonstrating curiosity, wanting to learn more about other pieces of the business, understand where you can help connect the dots. And that has to come from the individual, because not everybody is always necessarily wanting to lean in that way. But I think that, you know, really strong controllership functions find those times and spaces for their team to do that and to show up in a different way.
When you talk about that opportunity, I think sometimes people in FP&A are maybe more risk takers, right? They're willing to lean into asking questions when they don't know the answer, right? Putting themselves out there, taking that risk, being vulnerable. And in my experience, every time I've done that, you know, put my neck out there to like go try something new or do something new, it's been wildly rewarding in terms of typically the relationships that are built, as well as the learnings and opportunities. And I sometimes think there's maybe a perception that FP&A always goes out there and knows what they're going to do in the business. And that is so often not the case. It's so often a game of 21 questions to understand what's the business trying to achieve? How are they trying to achieve it? Where are my gaps in understanding and knowledge? And they're often immense, right? Like, you have to get yourself up to speed on topics that sometimes you're versed in and other times you know very, very little about. And I think if we could share that experience with a controllership team and create way more experiences for them to get out in the business and say, it's okay not to know. It's okay to take a risk. Part of taking a risk is sometimes you get things right and sometimes you acquire a learning opportunity. You know, getting something not right is an opportunity to learn and grow as an individual. And teaching that and that willingness to take that risk, I think, would be like essential. And I think that's, I mean, it's a skill set you have to learn in FP&A. And I think it's something that absolutely is quintessential to be great at controllership.
And I think one of the challenges that comes along is early stage, it's a bit easier for all the individuals on the finance team to have a finger on the pulse of what's going on and what one another's doing. But as a business scales and starts to get bigger, that gets really hard to do. We can't be in all the same meetings. We can't get all the messages on all the things to be aware. And so we have to be a lot more intentional about how do we take the insights that each team is gaining and efficiently share them with one another so that we're keeping each other aware, because sometimes the friction comes from, well, you didn't know, or, you know, you got asked the question, but it was really for my side to answer. Like, those things just will inevitably creep in because the rest of the world sees finance. I talk to finance, yet the teams, as they get a little bit bigger, do have different mandates and need to find ways of helping keep each other informed. And, you know, FP&A, they see insights or they're sharing things. They've sat in meetings with different business leaders. How do they bring those insights back so that controllership side knows things they need to know about what's been seen there? Because we don't share just one big brain. So how have you seen strong FP&A teams do that, and similarly controllership, so that they can keep each other in the loop?
I think documenting what you're learning, seeing, that sort of thing, so that it can be consumed asynchronously. I think we're in a neat new world at this point, right? And so I'm in a business that's constantly experimenting with AI. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we're doing a lot more of is just recording every video call that we're in and taking a transcript, slam it through ChatGPT, Gemini. It doesn't matter. Like, find an LLM and a piece of AI that can synthesize the tone, the content, that sort of thing. It can summarize it. You can prompt it to say, great, you know, take this 2-hour meeting and give me the 3 most impactful takeaways from this. You know, who has action items? What questions were asked? You can feed that information very, very easily to others at this point in time in a highly summarized fashion. So instead of 5 people showing up for a meeting, send one person, get a great transcript, leverage AI to summarize it for you, disseminate it to those other 4 people, and save probably 3 hours and 45 minutes, you know, 3 minutes of reading it, 4 minutes of reading it for those other 4 people instead of an hour a pop. That's leverage in your org that team can then go out and do more impactful things. And every time you go do something more impactful in your business, there's a greater draw from the rest of the function saying, you need to be here because we see the impact you're having as a finance organization.
And it's interesting because I agree, these newer tools are now allowing us to really supercharge that ability to communicate and drive more value amongst each other. And that's a great lead into the next question, which is, what is some of the technology that you have found most helpful in creating that alignment between the two sides of the finance team?
Clearly, we've worked together at Vena before. It can be something as simple as logging your forecast in a centralized piece of technology and sharing your insights in there. It can be AI, as we've talked about. you know, sometimes it's technology. Sometimes it's actually saying, hey, I would like to share this information with a different group of people. Communication is active, right? You have to do it with intent. You have to be thoughtful. And so you can leverage technology all over the place, and you should. That's how you get scale. But it all starts and is predicated on being intentional about your communications and acknowledging that you are consuming and receiving information that would be impactful to share with somebody else. And so, again, it goes back to you have to understand what your counterpart is trying to achieve in the organization. What are they focused on? How are they doing their job? How are you doing your job? What does the interlock look like? And then I think it's much, much easier to figure out a mode to share that.
When I think of the finance technology stack, I like to look at it holistically. And I think that the whole team needs to understand at least the most critical pieces of technology that you're using mm-hmm. as a team, and not think of them as it's this person's technology or that person's, because there's a couple key boulders that are everyone's technology, your ERP. A general understanding of how it's flowing and how the transactions are flowing into the actuals so that you can decide how you're going to plan for the future and, you know, the chart of accounts and yep. a lot of these common things that both parties want to understand. Why did you build? Why are you using those departments, et cetera? Then you've got whatever you're going to use for your forecasting and your insights, your reporting tool, even how you're going to buy things. Because what I've seen as time goes on and departments become more mature is FP&A gets brought in, even in that procure to pay process, mm-hmm. insofar as, okay, is their budget, was this approved? You know, having certain approvals that get built into the different parts of the process. And you need to be walking hand in hand as you're building these to then know that you've got alignment, that everyone's getting the pieces of data that they might need to do their part of the job. Just like it's easy for teams to think, well, this is a piece of marketing technology or this is a piece of finance technology. It's easy to think, well, that's just the system that payroll and HR uses for our people. But that system can be so important in feeding all kinds of the rest of the flows that we all need.
Isn't that just such a recurring theme these days, though, when you look at technology, making sure you're buying foundational pieces of technology, not individual point solutions? Look yeah. at your organization holistically, look at the flow of information and processes, look at it cross-functionally, look at it end-to-end. It's such a good reminder. I mean, we can apply it to finance, but everything we should be doing should be thought about holistically, end to end. How does it impact the organization in aggregate? And again, you're right, Melissa, like no different in your individual finance org, even if we're just going to be using the tool.
Has there been anything that you've seen in terms of how businesses have structured the teams that has led to better alignment between FP&A and controllership?
Ooh, I don't know that I would necessarily call out something organizationally. I think it's leadership traits that have typically formed that bond between the organization. So it's again, it doesn't matter, CFO, VP of finance, director of finance, whoever's leading those collective organizations, taking the time to make sure they maintain that connectivity. They mm-hmm. understand the value and the wins that each team is bringing to the table. Kind of take the horse to water, if you will, with your team. And if they don't understand or don't know what the other function is doing, I think it's incumbent on you as a leader to help them see the value that their counterpart brings to the table, help highlight strengths, help highlight areas where you can be collaborating together and bring value. Find ways to win together, as an example. And so I don't know if it would necessarily be org structuring, but it would be a leadership style and approach to me that would probably make the biggest difference. How about you?
I would agree the leadership style matters. I think it's also in how you've got your, you might have your team, mm-hmm. but having them then understand even how those teams have structured themselves. Sometimes you might have a financial operations group, okay? And then how is that going to then feed information into what FP&A needs and how they're going to get it versus other structures where maybe it's coming up more centralized through the controllership, right? It all depends on how those teams are defining themselves. And so what I have seen work really well is those leaders of those teams, as they're thinking of making changes, involving the other side in some of those discussions to see what would work. Just like you involve your other stakeholders outside of the team as you're thinking about a change, talking to one another and understanding, okay, well, what's that going to mean in terms of what you need and how we're still going to get it? I think that, you know, the decision that you're going to, where your FP&A business partners are going to sit within an organization. Sometimes they sit in finance, sometimes they actually sit with a straight line to the part of the business they support and a dotted line into finance. All of these decisions will impact the whole ecosystem in terms of how teams then need to build up ways to keep each other informed of what they're going to do. So I think it's being purposeful.
That's so true. You actually brought up some parts of finance that we can sometimes think FP&A, as an example, goes and prepares the budget, the forecast, that sort of thing. And you're bringing up AR and AP. And sometimes I think, you know, we talked about like early career learnings. I probably used to go prep a budget on my own, including working capital assumptions, instead of going direct to an AR team and say, does this DSO look right to you? Do you think you'll actually be able to collect in this time frame? You know, here are my billing assumptions. Does this look and feel right to you? Poke and prod at this. Let's collaborate. Let's talk about it. Same thing with AP. Why would you, you know, in FP&A as an example, go it alone and make those assumptions on your own? You would never do that if you were partnering with anyone else in the organization. You would seek their input. You'd seek their engagement. And there's an example of somebody in controllership maybe not understanding at all how they impact what somebody in FP&A does, and somebody in FP&A not understanding the value somebody in controllership could bring to something that they're trying to accomplish or a goal that they have.
I tend to think of it, you know, in FP&A, we spend a lot of our time on the profit and loss. Mm-hmm. That is the bulk of the energy that we are spending. When it comes to the balance sheet and the cash flow, they are secondary in many cases and something that you're putting time into after the fact. Yet controllership knows a lot of things that are happening that might impact that. Even the technical accounting decisions that get made about how these things might get accounted for, because it's not always just a cash-based accounting, things like deferred revenue and your deferred commissions, et cetera. And so having that FP&A, having a checkpoint with controllership to make sure, especially the considerations on those sides of things, I think it's critical. Otherwise, I think you're setting yourself up for a miss if you're not having some vetting and second eyes on what you're doing.
You talked about technical accounting. FP&A often gets focused on growth within an organization, right? It's natural, it's normal. They're working with the executive team. You're talking about how do you grow the top line. And technical accounting can work very much in your favor in terms of growth, right? How do you structure a deal? How would you build out your go-to-market motions? How do you bundle things? How do you not? What are the impacts? Often people in FP&A don't have that skill set, or they have it at a surface level. And through engaging folks that are more technical on the controllership team, I think somebody in controllership might say like, okay, like, you know, I interpreted this technical accounting issue that came up, but in reality, they can help be the tip of the spear for the organization to help structure deals differently, achieve growth in like different areas of the business based on how deals are structured. And I think it's cool as time goes on, seeing all of those areas where there's, again, those synergies or like the relationships are symbiotic, even where earlier on in my career, I wouldn't necessarily have noticed it or appreciated the value that everyone can bring to the table.
Even your shipping terms, right? So many things that trigger when you're going to recognize the sale has happened and your revenue clock's going to tick. I've seen controllership help with redefining processes for productivity, efficiency, but also maximum result for the business. So it's a critical one. How do you now as a CFO foster a sense of continuous improvement amongst the FP&A and controllership teams?
I think you have to set those huge goals for people. You want to sit down at the beginning of the year and, you know, ask yourself what seems unachievable. And you want to shoot for the moon, right? It's pretty important to do that. And so, yes, you want to make sure you set achievable goals. But once you've set that achievable goal, maybe you push it just that little bit further to try to make a person stretch, like myself included, the organization included. We have to be constantly pushing ourselves to achieve more and greater things. And so as we do that, as we set those large goals, we also try to break things down into like bite-sized pieces. What are you going to try to achieve this week, this quarter? Break down your metrics, break down your OKRs so that it can be in pieces ultimately. Sometimes something looks to be insurmountable on the surface, but if you break it down into phases or bite-sized pieces, people say like, okay, I can sprint towards that next topic, or I can sprint towards that next finish line and I can get there. And once they hit that next finish line, you establish a new finish line for the next sprint. And when you add up all those small pieces, reflect back over a year, you've managed to achieve some really, really extraordinary things as an organization. And so for me, how do you keep striving for more? Like, set really challenging goals, but then break it down into pieces so that your team gets to win all the time throughout the process.
So one last question, Tom. When you think about the next frontier of finance transformation, how do you see that evolving the roles of FP&A and controllership?
That is a great question, and I'm going to answer this one carefully. I think they are both going to be focused on growth. And we talked about that a little bit already. And that is not a growth at all costs environment. But I think both the FP&A organization and the controllership organization has to be focused on growth. If you think about value creation for an organization, it is going to be predicated on growth and top line. And yes, we have to do all of those things that have typically happened in finance, expense management, and all of that. But if you want to be a truly, truly impactful finance organization, you're going to find a way to contribute to the top line and to the growth of the organization. And I think that is the same whether you are in controllership, FP&A, treasury, procurement, tax, you take your pick. That's where the focus has to be. That's, you know, for me, where I think that like really the next generation of CFOs will push towards constantly and regularly.
Great insights, Tom. As always, appreciate having you on the show. Now, I know that you're familiar with our rapid fire questions. We have some new ones for you. So are you ready?
I sure am.
All right. First one. What to you is the hallmark of a mature finance organization in terms of how they operate?
Ooh, I think this one is pretty easy for me to answer. If every day feels like a fire drill, you haven't gotten there. Things come up occasionally, that's okay. But there should be a degree of predictability and order in what you do. So when those fires come up, it's no big deal to find the bandwidth to go tackle them. Everything else, you've got to get to the point where it's lather, rinse, repeat.
Great advice. And the next one is, what do you do to help you stay productive during the workday?
I actually schedule blocks of working time for myself. I find I'm constantly invited to a million and one meetings, and they're fantastic, right? They're a chance to collaborate. I actually block working time in each and every day to make sure I can stay focused on pushing those things across the line that need to get pushed across the line, and that I have left enough bandwidth in place so that as urgent or impactful things come up, we can address them and make sure that should be driving productivity ultimately, make sure I have enough time to tackle them.
Tom, as always, it's a pleasure to have you here on the show. Thank you.
It's been a great conversation. Thanks for having me.
Want to learn more about today's discussion? Check out the resources in our show notes. Don't miss out on future episodes. Subscribe to the CFO Show on your favorite podcast platform. For the CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. See you next time.